This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
First story takes a look at China's athletic hopefuls who for the 2022 Winter Olympics will have to undergo genetic screening for a chance to represent their host nation.
Genetics, what can it mean? The ability to perfect the physical and mental characteristics of every unborn child.
So, just like in the movie Gattaca, where... Gattaca? I'm getting that right.
Gattaca.
Where genetic tests were needed to enter almost any job in a dystopian future and dictated every part of a citizen's life, China, in real time, right now, says it's going to establish a laboratory standard for the selection of athletes by genetic markers. And this is according to a document posted by the Ministry of Science and Technology.
That's right. This means potential representatives will have to undergo whole genome sequencing, the process that determines a person's complete unique DNA profile. Now, athletes are usually selected through competitions and trials, and there have been no reports of other countries using similar genetic testing for their sportsmen, though some are conducting research on such topics.
Nobody would ever say that China does things halfway.
Anyone was going to do this first, you know it was going to be China.
That's right, and they're going to be counting those medals as they come in. However, this has, other countries have kind of explored this a little bit. Australian scientists, with approval from the Australian Institute of Sport, have genotyped more than 400 elite white athletes from 14 sports categories. 50 of them had competed in the Olympics. And the United States and Europe have also conducted similar studies, though none have publicly used the results for athlete selection.
Yeah, genes are closely related to sporting aptitude. They can influence the type of fiber that makes up muscles and have been linked to strength and endurance, and some studies suggest that genetic factors underlie 30 to 80% of the differences among individuals in traits related to athletic performance, right? So some gene-related illnesses like heart disease could also affect an athlete's competitiveness, although symptoms may not appear in the early stages of their careers.
So David Epstein wrote a book called The Sports Genes that discusses some of the research that links genetics to athletic ability. Here's a snippet of him explaining some of the findings.
We're used to thinking of all Kenyans as being great runners, but really, when I visited, it's one tiny tribe that makes up 10 to 12% of the population there, the Kalenjin tribe, that produces the vast majority of the good runners. People with northern latitude ancestry, you and I, Europeans, Michael Phelps, have longer torsos, which is like the long hull of a canoe, so that's better for swimming. Mm-hmm. He has extremely short legs. Michael Phelps is 6'4", has the same inseam as the guy who holds the world record in the mile, who's 5'9". Those guys wear the same size pants.
But of course, not everyone is on board with China's plans. Wang Huan, a researcher with the China Institute of Sports Science in Beijing, said she opposed using genes to decide who enters the Chinese national team. And I quote, "Every person is born with the right to participate in sports." Who is... said Wang, who is not involved in the Olympic testing, "People should not be judged by the way they were born, but what they strive to become."
That's
a very egalitarian ideal.
No, but that's also the Olympic ideal, right? I mean, part of it is...
So that was my question, Lynn. Are you for this or against this?
I'm not for it.
Okay.
I don't think that sport... As somebody who loves sport, who watches a fair amount of it, mm-hmm. I don't think sport is... And this is hard for me to say because I'm also a deeply competitive person, but sport isn't always just about winning. There's a reason why we care about the underdogs. There's a reason why those stories are the ones that are compelling. We like to see people going beyond what they thought they could do. And if you know that you're just born with, a torso like a canoe or whatever, it doesn't exactly make for a great story. Or it doesn't exactly mean that I look at you and I think, wow, that's really an Olympian.
But I want to win.
That's not how you really feel. Is that how you really feel?
No, I mean, okay, so how I really feel is I keep thinking that we've modified every other element about a specific sport. So if you look at the swimwear that American athletes wear, it has been engineered to within an inch of its life, right? Mm. Which already gives them a unique advantage over everyone else who doesn't have that swimwear
because they have more money in
microseconds.
Research.
Exactly, yeah. Right? It's the same with bicycle equipment, training equipment, all the stuff that people use all over the world.
Can I just say, though, that for people who listen to Uma on air and think, oh, wow, what an enthusiast, he likes things, you are not a sentimentalist.
I'm not.
Yeah, and I am.
Which
hugely.
Is why I'm questioning why we draw the line at modifying ourselves. So we look at implants and all these cybernetic stuff that we're adding to ourselves already, and does that really make it unfair in the sense that Americans already have an unfair advantage with the amount they spend on sport? So isn't the next natural step? Like, you know, China is not going to stop at genetic testing, right? Soon they're going to just breed athletes.
Do you know what the logical endpoint of all this is? It's real steel.
Oh my God.
That's all it is. No, I mean, that's what you're saying. You're basically saying that at the end of it, we're just going to have robots competing.
Yeah.
And you like, okay, yeah, we need to move on before I hit you.
Yes, I think we should. Let's move on now to our next story, which is about DBKL.
We want the DBKL need to be a professional body, working professionally, doing their best to provide service to the rakyat. Yeah, bukan ada kepentingan kroni ataupun politik ataupun individu dan sebagainya. Yeah.
That was Federal Territories Minister Khalid Abdul Samad talking about his hopes for DBKL to change its image from that of a corrupt institution into a professional one.
So he's emphasized several times over the importance of that image makeover, saying that he will not compromise with any contractor involved in corruption, including the culture of giving bribes and commissions. We're hearing a lot of this messaging coming out at
Hurrah.
The moment.
Yeah. Yes. Now, to quote the minister, he said that I am the Federal Territories Minister. The first statement I hear concerning DBKL is that it is the centre of corruption. He also asked for the full cooperation of all contractors to work professionally in order to wipe out that perception.
He was also asked to give examples of corruption within DBKL. Here's an audio from Kini TV of his statement back in July.
Sebagai contoh jualan tanah-tanah yang telah berlaku, ya, yang tidak mengikut prosedur yang seperti mana yang sepatutnya, ya, dan projek-projek yang asalnya tidak ada dalam bajet tapi diambil bajet 2019 untuk dalam digunakan pada 2018, ya, ni sebagai contoh-contoh umumlah. So by right, benda-benda yang professional institution ataupun satu badan yang bergerak secara professional dia tidak mahu lakukan, ya, tetapi bila keluarnya arahan maka mereka terpaksa akur, ya. So saya dah berikan jaminan saya tidak akan bertindak begitu, tetapi dalam apa jua cadangan, sekiranya ada yang tidak bersetuju maka mereka kenalah berikan sebab-sebab kenapa mereka tak setuju. Kalau mereka mahukan sesuatu yang berbeza maka mereka harus membentangkan pandangan mereka dan sebagainya, ya.
Right, the minister also refuted rumours that DBKL would not pay contractors who are considered as cronies of the previous UMNO BN administration.
He is hoping, I think.
Yes.
It's a long road.
But he's absolutely right in his statement. And I think that's something that has come up over and over again. This idea that all of these land grabs and contracts were afforded and nobody knows what's happening. And I guess the residents of areas don't know what the future of the area is going to be like. And that's why we had the whole Bukit Kiara issue,
which has been ongoing for a long time now. And
which looks like it finally might be resolved, though.
That's right. But it was a protracted battle and it was quite bitter.
Yeah. And that's not the only one. There are highways and apartment blocks and shopping malls that are coming up all over the place. And I think whoever is in the new government, not just the Federal Territories Minister, but I guess the MPs of that region, of those regions and territories, are also going to have to look into this, right?
Yes, because fundamentally, people care about where they live, work, eat, spend their time. And I think that's the thing, right? You want to be able to have some semblance of control over what happens and not just what happens within your house.
Or just know what's happening.
Yes.
So it's not like, surprise, shopping mall.
And then you know an appropriate response as well.
Exactly. We're taking you through some of the highlights from today's headlines. This one is a perennial point of contention among the Malaysian public.
Yes, it's an oldie but a goodie, and now a newbie again. It just kind of keeps coming round and round.
So we're going to be talking about, I guess, the Education Ministry and English medium schools.
Bangun!
Selamat pagi, cikgu!
Selamat pagi, murid-murid. Duduk.
So I mean, those kids were far too excited, lah, because nobody said, Selamat pagi, cikgu! It's Selamat pagi. Yeah. Yeah, all right. Anyway, the Education Ministry has come out to say that it's against the use of English as the medium of instruction in national schools. It's because using English apparently would violate the federal constitution and the National Language Act.
Okay, this next bit is quite detailed, but specifically Article 152 of the federal constitution, which says that Bahasa Malaysia is the national language, and then we've also got the National Language Act 1963-67, and it also contravenes the letter and spirit of the Education Act 1996, which states that Bahasa Malaysia must be the main medium of instruction in schools, except in national type schools where the national language still needs to be taught as a compulsory subject.
Yeah, so this was the ministry's written reply to Batang Sadong MP Nancy Shukri, who had asked for the ministry's stance on Sarawak schools using English as the medium of instruction. They did say that they prefer to raise the standard of English through other methods instead.
So this, as we said, is a perennial problem that's coming up once again, whether we were looking at the PPSMI, which was a proposal to teach math and science in English, or the dual language program. And opponents against such programs have argued that when it comes to the lack of proficiency in English, it's the teaching of the language that's the problem, not that it isn't the language of instruction. Here's the perspective of one such opponent, Professor Shari Mohamed Zain, a spokesperson of the Coalition to Abolish DLP.
You can improve English because the main thing is, as I can see, is how to improve English. You still can improve English without encroaching other subjects. You try to improve the pedagogy of teaching English. And there are so many methods of teaching English. And you try to do it maybe in the first few years, pilot project on that. And then you improve on it. And then finally we can get much, much better way of improving English. Simply just concentrating on the English subject.
So earlier we asked you what you thought about this, whether or not you think this is a debate that needs to be renewed, whether you'd be happy to see English as the medium of instruction in schools. And we've got some messages. One saying, I would be happy if national schools can consider English medium schools. Most parents nowadays do so by sending their kids to private or international schools, which is not cheap, and that is absolutely true. Ferdow says, hi BFM, when it comes to English in school education, can these three major schools, Sekolah Kebangsaan, Sekolah Kebangsaan China, and Sekolah Kebangsaan Tamil, agree with this system? And finally, we have Toh saying, English is a good medium for science and maths. In Singapore, Malay is the official language, and the medium of instruction in schools is still English, which is a benchmark to strong economy and educational policies.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know if the answer to this question from the Ministry of Education actually checked Tun Dr. Mahathir, because he has been a firm proponent of actually moving things along in the English direction. Maybe not towards straight up national language or medium of instruction, but at least for math and science. And I tend to agree with him on that policy, but I guess where it fell short was the teaching of it and the training of the teachers, right?
Yes, and I also think that there's always this constant fear of leaving people behind, basically.
Yes.
That if your proficiency in English isn't sufficient, that you're not going to be able to grasp what's being taught. And that is a real issue and not one that I want to discount.
And I have I don't think it's a politically correct solution. I think it's a more complex solution, but I think both. Right, everyone talks about it as if it's a zero-sum game, and I know it requires a major revamp and relook at the syllabus, but why can we not put equal attention on BM and English? If we could speak both of those languages, if we can traverse those two languages seamlessly, our kids will be an unstoppable force. And then you throw in a third language, you throw in the Tamil, the Mandarin, whatever they want to study, right? The Education Blueprint does talk about it, but it talks about it like over the period of 2 decades.
Yeah, I think there is this idea that once you choose a language to reign supreme, that's all you get. And
exactly.
That's not necessarily the case. I will say that as somebody who studied both maths and science in Malay, I kind of wish I had a little bit more of a grasp on those terms in English. Because
correct.
There are times, especially when it comes to mathematics, that I actually struggle. What is a jajari? You know, it's
your
things
like
that.
Yeah, radius, that's
exactly.
Right.
and the formulas are all different.
Oh, I know. It's like 2 pi,
pi
r and pi j squared,
exactly.
Right? Exactly.
So yeah, there are some things I miss.
All right. Keep those thoughts coming in, actually. Let us know what you think about English as the medium of instruction in schools, or if you have any other suggestions on what the education system should focus on. In the meantime, we've got some music coming your way. It's Joan Jett.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.